Welcome back to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute, a Fan Nation college football podcast brought to you weekly by KillerFrogs.com. I'm Brett Gibbons, and I'm joined by a familiar face to everybody here. That's Barry Lewis, our editor. Barry, how are you doing today? Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Brett. Good seeing you again. Always fun to be on these with you. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, and this one's a fun one. We're kind of in the doldrums of the college football offseason. It's late July. Football is kind of starting to ramp up, but we're going to step away from the games and the players and all that stuff. We're going to talk about game days. That's something that's very near and dear to my heart. Something I know that you take a part in too. We're going to talk Big 12 game days, atmosphere, stadiums, all the whole likes. It's going to be another fun episode. So
I'm looking forward to this because you have taught me so much about this over the last couple of years about what to look at game day experiences and I know you're so passionate about it. So yeah, I'm excited about this. So
yeah. And we've had a college football traveler on, not this podcast yet, but other Killer Frogs podcasts before, Andrew Ballas of College Football Tour, who's been to over 100 football stadiums for games. And he's been doing that for years and years and years. And he's a huge Wisconsin fan. So this, I guess, is a shout out to him. We will definitely have him on at some point during the season to talk about his travels. But right now we're going to talk about our experiences. And I'm pretty well traveled. I have road to CFB, which is similar to Andrew's venture. I haven't been in nearly as many as he has, but I have been to my fair share of the Big 12. And Barry, you've been going to road games for TCU for, I won't say how many years, but you've been going to TCU games for enough to where you have a lot under your belt, which I'm really excited about. So let's dive into it. And I want to start with one that's going to ruffle some feathers, because this will, because I know there's some people, I've gotten mean comments about this, defending theirs. The loudest stadium in the Big 12.
Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State.
And I'm doing it because it's the way that stadium is oriented, with the basketball arena right up to one of the end zones. It just kind of locks all that noise in there. You add in those paddle people at the other end zone and the noise they make throughout the game. I think that makes for a pretty loud environment.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think my favorite thing about Oklahoma State, their football stadium in general, is that layout. It makes it feel really intimate and actually really makes it feel small, to be frank. It's not small, but it makes it feel small. And having the, like you said, the basketball arena backed up and then all the suites that kind of trap things in it, like right. Noise cannot escape. So there could be 35,000 people at this game and it's going to be really loud.
Also, it's one of the only stadiums, and I think there's only like a handful, that are oriented east-west.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm also wondering if the way the wind flows because of that, if that keeps it somewhere trapped in there too.
Maybe. I've been to one game at Oklahoma State. It was against Boise State. It was in late September. It was hot as, you know, you can imagine. It would be in Stillwater. So I didn't feel much of a breeze that day, but I can't speak on it as a whole. Maybe somebody that's more familiar at the stadium can let us know if wind does get in there and if that affects the acoustics. It very well could. I went with one that I think we'll talk about for you later. I went with Cincinnati. They're new to the Big 12. But boy, that stadium can get jumping. And it's very similar to Oklahoma State, where it's set into the ground and it's, the noise is trapped in with surrounding buildings and press boxes and things like that. And Cincinnati's been really good at football lately. I'm interested to see crowd retention this coming year, because they lost everything, their head coach. Right. A lot of their momentum. And I know they come into the Big 12. So there should be a lot of excitement, especially considering they open up the Big 12.
They get a Power 5 out of it. So.
Right. Yeah. And they actually open their Big 12 slate against Oklahoma at home. So if you want to hear what Nippert Stadium can be at its absolute best, I would implore people, if they're available, to go to Oklahoma at Cincinnati. And you'll know what I'm talking about. This place is super loud. It's exciting. I think it's one of the best football stadiums, period, in the country. Cincinnati is a great atmospheric game day to the Big 12.
And isn't Nippert one of the smallest stadiums?
It's one of the
in the Big 12.
Yeah, it'll be it's second smallest, I think, to Houston in the Big 12. Okay. Once that's finalized, it's also one of the oldest in the country. So that's bringing a bit of history with it.
Right.
Kind of similar to loudest stadium, but not really, because I see we have two different answers. The most energized crowd, and this doesn't necessarily have to be with noise. You know, let's say the stadium is 70% full. That's an unfortunate reality of college football we do live in. Are those people really engaged and still doing their best? What was your choice for the most energized crowd in the Big 12?
I'm going Texas Tech on this one. And I'm going with that, not to steal your thunder for something else we're going to talk about later down the road on this chat, but it has to do with those dang tortillas and how they can be flung, and how even how they can be flung when they're playing in Fort Worth. So I think they're getting into those games and they stay energized. So
I almost agreed with you. I almost went with Texas Tech. But I think it's a little unfair because the one of the games I've been to at Tech was a night game where they hosted a top five Oklahoma team that had Kyler Murray on the other sideline. So, you know, you put that Oklahoma team in almost any stadium in the country and it's going to be super energized. But yeah, I like Texas Tech. They're a very engaging crowd. I actually went with Oklahoma State for a lot of the same. I'll be brief about it. All the same reasons that you said, that the Paddle people, it's very, very, very passionate fan base. And yeah, the way that stadium is oriented, you really feel the energy all game long. So I went with the Pokes there. A contentious one, maybe, because I know everybody is very proud of their tailgating. So I didn't put best tailgating. I went with favorite tailgating. I don't want to put best on any of these because these are all subjective and personal preference. But what school, or by the looks of it, schools, have your favorite tailgating in the Big 12?
I had two on my list, and I really couldn't completely decide. But one of them was West Virginia. But I'm going to talk about that tailgating experience later. So for this particular one, I'm going to go Oklahoma State. And I'm going to say Oklahoma State, this might be shocking, I think I've been to more tailgates at Oklahoma State and Stillwater than even in Fort Worth.
Oh, wow. Really?
So I don't do many tailgates at Fort Worth. We usually just go straight into the stadium. So I don't really have a lot of tailgating experience at TCU. Oklahoma State, there's family connection there. Extended family has a wonderful tailgate set up right outside of the stadium. All of their family friends are coming to that. It's along a great row of other longtime tailgaters. It's a great atmosphere. That's one that I will go and make sure I'm there early just to enjoy the tailgating in Stillwater.
Yeah, I was very impressed by the scope of, or the scale, I should say, of Oklahoma State's tailgating. It's all over the place. It bleeds throughout all of campus. And of course, you know, you have downtown within walking distance of the stadium. So that almost kind of feeds into the tailgating energy, like at Eskimo Joe's and all those places that are really rowdy, that, you know, bleeds right into the tailgating experience. I do like Oklahoma State's a lot. We've been talking about them a lot early on here.
That's true.
I went with a very specific kind of tailgating. And the reason I said favorite tailgating is because I don't believe that this is the best tailgating in the Big 12, but my favorite tailgate setup is actually Baylor's tailgating. They're one of the schools that you don't really think of. You think of Washington, you think of Tennessee first and foremost, but Baylor has the Baylor Armada, and it's really cool. I anything on a boat for college football is great, right along the Brazos River. You can go under the bridge that walks over to campus. So I want Baylor, again, favorite tailgating, not necessarily the best or the biggest here in the Big 12.
I like that. I've never done that at Baylor, and it would be something I would be interested in doing it. So
I certainly tried. Yeah. They're not exactly, hey, walk onto my boat and enjoy a nice tailgate. You kind of have to know somebody. And that is the case with Washington and Tennessee. And we can talk to, Andrew Bowles in the future, because he's done sailgating at least Washington. I know he's done Washington.
And sure Tennessee.
Oh, he did do Tennessee too.
He hasn't done Baylor. So.
Right. Okay. Well, that may say, you know, we'll take our dig at Baylor because this is a TCU podcast. Maybe that says something about the Baylor fan base, whatever.
Oh, I have things to say about Baylor later, so you'll hear it.
Great. Good. We'll get to it. I wanted to talk about stadiums now. This is my lifeblood. This is what launched my road to CFB excursion, is these massive stadiums in college football. And I want to talk about your favorite overall stadium structure. So just talking about just a building, doesn't have to include fans. You can include the grounds around it because I'm going to, but what is your favorite structure in the Big 12?
And I tried to think this one through to maybe get something different than what I thought you were going to answer on this, but I couldn't. I think my Mama Kay would kill me if I didn't answer this one this way. It's going to be Oklahoma. And I say Oklahoma because I have lived through and seen so many different iterations of that same stadium. And each time they do something to it, it just improves upon the stadium itself. There were the days of when there were no upper deck. I remember when the first upper deck got added, then when the second upper deck got added, and then when they did what they've done to the south end zone and made that a much more user-friendly area. I think they have continued to make it a benchmark of what a blue blood stadium should be in college football.
Yeah, I agree with you here. My favorite stadium in the Big 12 is Oklahoma. Like you said, the Barry Switzer Center that they added, the grounds around it with the Heisman Walk, iconic. It's great. I like the over. I like that kind of situated area of OU's campus a lot too. So I think that plays into it. Yeah, I'm with you. And there's no bad seats. I don't think in Oklahoma Stadium, even the upper decks, you're pretty engaged, but you can get really affordable tickets kind of in those lower corners. And because those corners don't go up as high as other stadiums, like those are some of the best seats in all of the Big 12, you know, aside from sitting in a club seat, right? Just the, you know, standard bench seats. That's where I sit when I go to those games. I've been to a few of them and I always sit there because I think it's great value. I also kind of threw Baylor out here as a second close, but not necessarily because of the stadium itself. I think it kind of lacks a little bit of character. I do like the big overhangs and the way it's kind of enclosed, but it's the location. It's on the Brazos River. I think the athletic, I mean, the entirety of Baylor's campus, but specifically the athletic wing or section, whatever you want to call it, of Baylor's campus is absolutely beautiful. And so I think that's probably why I would put it around there, but I think it's Oklahoma pretty clearly.
And, you know, Baylor has one other thing other than just the grounds around it. I think Baylor has probably the easiest accessible remote parking.
Yeah.
When you can go to downtown Waco, a mile or so away, park for free in any of those downtown lots and catch a bus that drops you right off at the stadium door. I think that's great.
So. Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. And for their spring game too, they open up the parking at the stadium itself for free. And because 35 is right there, such an easy in out. Sure. I'm with you there. It was a little bit of a nightmare when they're completely, you know, gutting it with construction, but yeah, I'm with the accessibility is a pretty big deal. And Baylor has really good accessibility. Favorite overall stadium to see a game at, but I'm going to make you exclude TCU because I know that there could be bias in here say, you're a TCU fan, you're a TCU alum. So of course, Amon G. Carter Stadium is going to resonate with you a little differently. I wanted to go outside of TCU and say overall experience, what's your favorite stadium to see a game at? Now this includes folks in it and the traditions of game going on.
And this goes back to my heritage. Before I was a TCU fan, I was a Sooner fan. I was born in a diehard Sooner parents to this day who are still diehard Sooner fans. My first football experience was in Norman. That the Boomer Sooner song, if you know the lyrics to it, it's I'm a Sooner born, a Sooner bred, and when I die, I'll be a Sooner dead. I say to my mom and dad all the time, I was a Sooner born, I was a Sooner bred, and when I die, I'll be a Horned Frog dead. but it just goes back to so many memories as a kid. I've told the story before. I was 10, my sister was 8. That's when the first upper deck got added at Oklahoma. Mom and dad had season tickets since they were in college. They got so excited about the new fancy upper deck that they bought two seats up there. That was going to be the plan. Here we had this nice family of four. They had it all planned out. One parent would go to the upper deck with one kid. The other parent would go to the other seats with the other kid until that first game. And then both parents were like, no, we're both going to the fancy seats. So I my mom laughs about this to this day. She's like, you couldn't do this in today's world, but back then you could. And she took the 10-year-old and the 8-year-old and just parked us on the bench. And there were four women behind us. they probably weren't even that old at that time, but to a 10-year-old and 8-year-old, they certainly were. We called them the four grandmas. They took care of us back there. There was another guy that sat right next to us. He and I started talking a lot. He's the one who taught me about what a football game was and what was going on. And so he was a great education. So just from those memories of all growing up, it has to be OU for me.
And the four grandmas were definitely in their like late 30s.
Probably.
For context. It was really hard not to put Oklahoma down here. I will talk about them in a couple of prompts from now, but in general, in just being in the stadium and the stadium atmosphere, I think the most fun I've had at a Big 12 game was Texas Tech. You know, it's a night game in Lubbock. It was chilly. To someone that was new to Texas that year, I went 2018 when I moved to Texas. I didn't know that the Panhandle was just basically the Midwest in terms of chill. I'm from Ohio. I'm from Cleveland. And it was cold and it was great. And the stadium was packed. They had to open up the grass section, you know, in the one end zone where the goalposts are. And they filled that to the brim with students. And again, they just welcomed a top five Oklahoma team in there with the Heisman Trophy winner to be. And they combined for like 110 points, you know, classic Texas Tech OU game. And so I guess I'm focusing most on the individual experience, but from what I've heard from everyone else that's been to many Tech games, this isn't all that unusual. And, you know, that place can get jumping, and especially when TCU visits. I know it'll be a Thursday night, but when TCU visits this year, the place is probably going to be pretty similar. So I'd have to say the most fun I've had inside a stadium for a football game was Texas Tech as far as Big 12 goes. Shifting from stadiums that we've been to and seen a game at to stadiums we have not been to and seen a game at, what is your bucket list stadium in the Big 12? There's not many to choose from, but which is it?
I'm going BYU on this one. And going BYU because when we were in the same conference back in the Mountain West days, 2005 to 2011, I wanted to go to Provo so much. Never did it work with my schedule at that point. Those views are supposed to be just absolutely incredible. I want to go just for that experience alone right there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good answer. I've been to BYU in the summer, not in a game day. Okay. And I can attest that those views are amazing, but I didn't go at sunset. And I think that they probably get just a little bit better at sunset.
I would also on my list would be Cincinnati, one because of what you've talked about so much is about the whole game day experience. That's another one that when we were conference opponents back in the Conference USA days, it just didn't work for me to make it to Cincinnati, and I would love to do that. So,
good. Cincinnati is a great choice, and to maybe more localized Big 12 fans that maybe aren't as familiar with Cincinnati, it's going to be a huge surprise, a very pleasant surprise, I think, to those that can appreciate game days and atmospheres. It's incredible, especially with the way that they've been rolling lately. Their tailgating scene is outstanding. That may be something that's a surprise to people that aren't as familiar with this new Big 12 member coming in. Get familiar with it because they have awesome tailgating. It's in a wonderful city. I really like Cincinnati. I'm a bit, you know, partial to it because I'm an Ohioan. But it really is just it's a truly great stadium campus. The whole experience is just awesome. So I did put BYU on my bucket list because I have not been to a game yet. But I'm going. I just realized we went all new Big 12 members here. I put UCF down as mine.
Okay.
I've not been to the Bounce House at all for a game or otherwise, but I think this is one where your first experience should be for a game. These are extremely passionate fans. It's loud. They call it the Bounce House for a reason. They jump around, that thing moves. It's not the biggest stadium in the Big 12, but it may be the most densely packed, especially this coming season. UCF should be pretty good. I've talked about it on here before. Yep. But I think UCF is my bucket list.
I would also say UCF for a non-game day experience. Just if you were happen to be there at the right time, to be able to catch a rocket launch.
Oh yeah, of course.
Because their 50-yard line is on the same latitude as Cape Canaveral, what, just like 45, 60 miles away. So it's supposed to evidently get some really good views of rocket launches. So that would be an experience.
That is awesome. I think that's a good bucket list, just individual kind of sports thing. Or if you're not a sports fan, but you're a fan of, you know, space exploration, that may be a really good thing for you. Wow. Exactly. I didn't know that. I didn't know that that's where they put their 50. That's great.
Yeah.
There's a lot of schools where if you really dig into it, like their 50 yard line placement is very intentional. For Bowling Green, so Bowling Green's campus, they now have a clock tower in the middle of it. That's where I went to school. Okay. That used to be the 50 yard line of the old football stadium. And that's where the Browns used to have their summer practices. That's actually why the Browns have the colors they do. They adopted it from Bowling Green. But if you go in and find those like little nitpick details, the stadiums are always placed at very intentional spots. And if they're not, then there's something on campus signifying that, just kind of tying it all together. I think those are really cool nuggets.
That's cool.
So now, favorite all around game day. This includes the tailgating experience. This includes everything. I mean, it's accessibility, the college town, the eateries, the atmosphere, the team, everything. Wrap it all into one. What's been your favorite Big 12 game day?
This one was hard. And this one, yes, my mom will probably kill me for saying this one. I'm going Stillwater and Oklahoma State. And I think we hit on it earlier. It's the tailgating experience. It's the Eskimo Joes. It's the campus itself is just
beautiful.
A great campus.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
So close to downtown and all that is in Stillwater. If you happen to catch Oklahoma State on homecoming, I can't remember their tagline, but the best homecoming in America.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the brightest orange and all of that other things that they do. It's just, that's just a whole great overall experience.
I went with the rival, and I'm sure the one that you contemplated putting down on here, but Oklahoma. I'm a sucker for tradition. I don't know. Emotional is not really the right word for it. I just get very like, I don't know. I'm very impacted by the tradition and the history of college football. And I think that's why I have to go with Oklahoma. I think the entirety of it, with the exception of tailgating, I don't think their tailgating is great. But when you're just kind of like a solo visitor that drove there tailgating, you know, I haven't done a ton of tailgating in that respect, but just the Heisman Walk, the Palace on the fact they call it the Palace on the Prairie.
Right. Right.
Like it seems to always have just the bluest skies, the, you know, the traditional Oklahoma uniforms that haven't changed in I don't know how long. You know, you have the Sooner Schooner, just everything about an Oklahoma game day. I would put it, If aliens invade or I had to, you know, tell somebody not from this world or just somebody who's not familiar with college football, somebody not from this country even, and give them like three game days that are like, here's why I am so fanatical about this, I would put Oklahoma's as one of those three.
Wow. Okay.
And be like, just the tradition, the pageantry. I love Oklahoma game days, and I'm not an Oklahoma fan. Oklahoma beat Ohio State, and it was a very, very maddening experience. Baker Mayfield, when he planted his flag at the Ohio 50, that made me mad. So I'm actually partial on the opposite side of like, I actually have a semi disdain for the Oklahoma football team, but damned if their game days aren't the best in my eyes.
There you go.
I wanted to keep this mostly positive, but we got to take some shots. And again, this isn't worst game day. This is least favorite game day. What's the least fun you've had going to a Big 12 football game?
I had to go with two on this one. I couldn't separate the two. One of them was a specific experience, and I'll talk about that. I'm going to first say Baylor.
Shocking.
And yes, yeah, I know. But have you seen a picture of that stadium from the air?
It looks like a toilet bowl.
So, you know, come on, folks. So that just adds to it. And I was in that stadium for the infamous 61-58 game. So it still pains me just to think about that stadium for that. So yeah, that had to be on my list. The other, I will say, I had gone to a couple games at Texas back years and years ago. And then for many years, didn't. And then when we fell out of the Southwest Conference and that fell apart, we didn't play at Texas, so I didn't go back to Austin. So went to Austin. It was Andy Dalton's first game. So I'm thinking that had to have been 2007 Andy Dalton as a freshman. So 2007 would have been before TCU was back in the Big 12. So this was a non-conference September hot game in Austin. And we were in the seats up at the top of one of the upper decks. And it was early September and it had been hot. And Austin had had an influx of crickets.
Oh, I hate that. Millions. I know exactly what happens every year. I know what you're
talking
about.
Millions and millions of crickets. And they were all ended up dead at the top of the upper deck. You couldn't walk anywhere without crunching on crickets. The smell of dead crickets was just horrible. And because of that, I refused to go back to a game in Austin ever since, until last year. And I had the opportunity to go last year and actually be in the press box and just walking around that stadium beforehand and experiencing it from that standpoint. I had to kind of say, okay, maybe it's not as bad as I thought, but I was in the press box, so I didn't have to deal with any crickets. So
that cricket invasion is awful. And anybody that lives in Central Texas knows exactly what you're talking about. It is a terrible couple of weeks, especially if you have a dog they have to take for walks. That takes serious interest in those. But, you know, I actually am going to side with you for Texas, maybe not for my least favorite, but if I had like a most disappointing or most underwhelming is Texas. And the structure itself is amazing. But looking at your note of crickets here, I actually thought you were going with a different way. And I was going to agree with you on it, is that Texas Stadium is quiet, guys. Like, I'm sorry. It's not built to hold noise. And I'm sure when Alabama was in town or when they hosted Joe Burrow and LSU, yeah, it was probably really loud. I didn't go to those games. I went to other games at Texas, standard opponents, and it's just quiet. And that's not a fault of, well, it kind of was a fault of the fans, because one of the games I went to, they only beat Tulsa by 7 points. So no one was really all that happy. But yeah, when you said crickets, I thought you meant because it was so quiet. And I was like, yeah, I agree with you there. But that's not actually my least favorite. I think Houston was my least favorite. Preface, I was super sick that day. Like, really sick. I'm actually not even factoring that into it. It was just mostly empty. To be frank, and I apologize to Houston fans, the fans, at least at that game, especially in the student section, are rotten. They're obnoxious. They think that their team is a whole lot better than it is. You know, I'm not offended by bad words or slurs, but when it came to that game, it was that game and the backyard brawl, which backyard brawl is a long hated rivalry. As fans, I was like, actually, like, guys, you need to chill out. Like, I don't know. It just, like, the stadium doesn't have a lot of character. It's a newer one. It wasn't great. The pregame stuff was okay. It's the University of Houston's not in a great part of town either. And it's just like all those things wrapped together. I just, like, Houston was one of the things where I'm just like, it was fine. The game was outstanding. Houston completed a 24-point fourth quarter comeback to win, which was exciting and awesome. But like, the overall game experience itself just wasn't, it was one of the worst I've ever been to. And I don't think the fans helped, because the fans are rude, obnoxious, vulgar. It's just kind of like, guys, have some class. And I think the Big 12 is going to be surprised, especially when you get some in-state rivals coming in there at hopefully it's changed, or maybe I was just around the wrong people, but it's just how nasty some of these fans can be.
And they get four in-state rivals now. So
yeah, their schedule this year lies to where they don't leave the state of Texas until October 28th. And they leave state of Texas twice, at Kansas State and at UCF. All their other games, even non-conference, UTSA, Rice, and Sam Houston State are all in the state of Texas. Just interesting scheduling note.
There you go.
Okay. I think that's enough negativity for the podcast. Let's move on and say your favorite Big 12 college town. This was one that you had texted me before recording that you really wanted to do. So I want to hear why you're so passionate about this one.
Well, and I had actually true confession this morning at the gym. I listened to last week's episode with you and Nate talking about superlatives. And in that you both talked about your favorite college towns. So I heard those stories, and those were great.
Yeah. Go listen if you'd like to hear my answer on this. Barry, I'm going to let you out of the floor.
I'm going Manhattan, Kansas. I've not been to a football game in Manhattan, but I've been to multiple basketball games and multiple baseball games. I love that town. It's a great college town. I love Aggieville, which is just off of campus, a whole strip of restaurants and bars and other fun places. I found a couple of great restaurants, one in Aggieville, one outside of campus. The one in Aggieville is Blue Stem Bistro, great coffee bar, great place to go take your laptop, do some work during the day. Can't go to Manhattan without going to Bourbon and Baker. If you like your bourbon to drink and your desserts to your baked desserts, plus a good menu in between, that's a great place. I can't wait to actually go have a football game day experience in Manhattan.
I've been to Manhattan. It was on along a summer road trip, so I didn't get to have Bourbon and Bakery at 7:30 in the morning when I was there, as much as I would have liked to, at least the bakery side of it. It's very surprising to those that are unfamiliar with the geography of southeast-ish Kansas. It's hilly and green and tree-lined and beautiful. I didn't know that existed there, to be honest, as someone that, you know, ignorantly thinks all of Kansas is just flat farmland. It's not. It's gorgeous. I was very, very pleasantly surprised. Kansas State's campus, gorgeous. The Bill Snyder Family Stadium, gorgeous. I'm with you. I've not been for a game, but I have visited.
And it's from our perspective here in Dallas-Fort Worth, they have a great new airport. It has two flights a day, and both of those flights are nonstop from Dallas-Fort Worth. So makes it easy breezy to get in and out of. So it's great.
I'm going to let you have the floor for the next two as well, because I just don't have quite the experience that you do. So I want to hear you. Your most memorable game day story, TCU oriented. So in Fort Worth.
Okay. I'm going to mention two on this one. One of them, actually, you and I would not be having this conversation right now today if it weren't for the first one I mentioned. This was West Virginia in Fort Worth, 2021. The game was absolutely horrible.
Oh, it was painful to watch. Just awful.
It was painful to watch. It ended up being Gary Patterson's last home game as a head coach. We didn't know that at the time, but a week later we found out it was. So that ended up being his last game. But I have written about this before, that day still lives in my mind as one of the best days that I have had with a TCU game day experience. And we mentioned Andrew Bouse with College Football Tour. That was the day that I first met him. It was a 6:30 kick. We met at 9:30 in the morning. We started off at Old South Pancake House, TCU tradition. And then from there, we walked all over campus. We told stories about different things on campus. We saw all of the Horned Frog statues on all places at campus. Got to have the whole pregame experience outside the stadium. I am upset with him about one thing about that day, that it wasn't until almost kickoff is when he said, "Hey, we have a friend that lives here in Fort Worth that's also doing the same thing. Do you think he could come join us?" Well, yes, but why didn't you say so earlier? We could have had the whole day together. But that was just one of those days that when it was over, even despite the loss, I was like, I don't want this day to end. You and I met that night after the game. I think you and I could have talked for two more hours if I wasn't getting the look from my wife of we're leaving. So I just think that one, just from a personal note, that one just meant so much to me. From a game perspective, it sucked. But from a game perspective, and I know other TCU fans are going to jump on this one, November 2009 at home against Utah. The 2009-2010 seasons were just phenomenal seasons to be a Horned Frog. Went 12-1 in 2009. The only loss was to Boise State in the first Fiesta Bowl that TCU played in. And then in 2010, went 13-0 with the Rose Bowl victory. So those 2 years were just magical. We played Utah that day at home. And if going back to the Mountain West Conference when we were in it, really it was Utah, TCU, and BYU and then everybody else. And so it was BYU and Utah were always the big games. And we both came into that game ranked. It was TCU's first time to be on game day, first time for game day to be on campus. It was a packed, standing room only crowd in the old stadium. It was the end of the 2010 season is when the upper deck got demolished and the Amon Carter, as we know it today, got rebuilt. I believe that game still holds the record for the attendance record at TCU. That was an incredible day.
What was the final score to that game? Do you remember?
We won, and it was great. It was not tight. I don't recall the score. It was not close.
55-28, they killed him. And yes, it does to this day hold the record for the largest crowd there with 50,307 fans. And the fact that it's at 46,000 today with not a ton of standing room only, that's probably not going to change.
The old stadium was bigger than it is today, but I think capacity at the old stadium was 48. So
yeah,
to get to 50, it's still pretty good. A lot of standing room only on that. So,
oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. I can't see where today you can cram an extra 4,500 people in. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's a record that will almost certainly stand. Okay. Most memorable Big 12 game day, but now not at TCU. It can include TCU, but it doesn't necessarily have to be at TCU.
I'm going West Virginia 2012. This was the first year for TCU and West Virginia to join the Big 12. So it was like, okay, this is going to be a new road destination for us. Let's go. And I mentioned it earlier when we talked about best tailgating, and I said I would come back to West Virginia. It was because of this game day experience that I had in West Virginia in 2012. It was early November. It was just a few days after Tropical Storm Sandy hit the East Coast.
Oh, yeah.
So it was cold. It was miserable. I had heard horrible things about going to West Virginia. I was told, do not wear opposing team colors, wear blue and gold, or wear grays. You can't go in your team color because you're going to get so much grief and you're not going to have a good time. Well, I can't do cold weather football and not be in purple. That's what, if I have to put cold clothes on, it's going to be in purple. So three of us went, my wife and a good friend of ours, we were there. We're like, screw it. We're going to be in our purple. We don't care. We got on a bus to go to the stadium. Every person on that bus was just hospitable and open and welcome. And we're like, we are so glad to be in this conference with you. Let's keep this up and welcome to Morgantown. And the bus dropped us off right at the top of one of the parking lots that you had to walk through to all the tailgate areas to get into the stadium. And that little walk, just 100 yards or so to the stadium, full of tailgaters, full of people who just were like, hey, come over. And we got some pepperoni rolls. And then there was the guy that had the warmed spiced Captain Morgan, and like, okay, on a cold day, hell yes, I'll take some of this.
That sounds real nice.
Exactly. And so we were having just a great conversation, and I'm talking to this guy over the Captain Morgan. And I said, you all had such a bad reputation. And I told him what I was told. And we couldn't wear purple. We couldn't say anything that we weren't for West Virginia just because it was a horrible experience. And I'll never forget what he said to me. He was like, when you meet somebody born and bred in West Virginia, they are going to be so open and welcome and hospitable to you. It's the people from Pittsburgh and New Jersey who couldn't get into their own state schools who have come here and have made that reputation for us. So, okay, fast forward into the game. The game goes into double overtime. And in the second overtime, West Virginia was up first. They got the touchdown. They got the extra point. TCU gets the ball, gets the touchdown. So now you have a decision to make. Go for one and go to the third overtime. go for two on the road. What do you do? Gary Patterson, being Gary Patterson, went for two. TCU makes the 2-point conversion. TCU wins. In the meantime, I'm right on the edge of this TCU section versus an obnoxious West Virginia section. One guy was in my face throughout the whole two overtimes. He's looking at me and he's just screaming and he's being ugly and basically living up to that reputation I heard. Remembering what I'd heard from the guy at the tailgate, I just looked at this guy at one point and said, "Hey, where are you originally from?" "Pittsburgh." So point validated. So.
As a Cleveland Browns fan, I'm not that surprised. Pittsburgh's a wonderful city. I met plenty of wonderful people at their game day, but the general consensus for me is that Pittsburgh people are just mad all the time about everything always. And I will not apologize for saying that to any of them.
There you go.
That's funny because I was actually going to ask if that reputation for West Virginia fans came from Pitt fans, because that is a nasty rivalry, or Penn State fans, you know, one of their landlocked border, you know, land border rivals, I suppose. Because yeah, my experience in Morgantown was everybody was amazing. And now I was a neutral fan and was rooting to see West Virginia win that day, but they were just so kind. I mean, I remember they, first of all, I got into the Alumni Center for no reason. I should not have been there, but they're like, "Hey, you want to come meet our, the president of Alumni Association, like this high ranking guy." And so I got to meet with them, chat with them. And, the person that was hosting me, I won't use his name. They had asked me not to, when writing these things, he brought in a mason jar of homemade moonshine. It was delicious. And he shared with everybody.
I remember you texting me as that was happening. So yes,
yeah, that was a very nice start. And they were just wonderful people. Like, everybody was wonderful. They're genuinely interested in where you're from and, you know, why you're there. What, you know, they're welcoming. Come over to here, meet these people. Here's some former players. You know, here's a drink. Let's go Mountaineers. Like, it was such a great game day. So I was wondering if it came from opposing fans, or, you know, I guess fans that come from opposing cities. All right, we will do a quick rundown on traditions, which is tough because I feel like we could talk about this forever, but I wanted to get some, you know, just kind of an aside, like, we're just doing traditions here because that is so much of what makes college football amazing. And I want to start with your favorite in-game traditions. So this can be, you know, up to your interpretation, but I kind of thought about it, for me, from whistle to whistle. You know, it's not when I first get in there, it's not band oriented, you know, it's while the game is actually going on. What's your favorite in-game tradition?
This one was easy for me. Again, going back to my heritage and my growing up, I went with the Sooner Schooner. The coach that comes running out of the corner of the end zone every time there's a score, and with the horses pulling it, the covered wagon. You know, so many people don't even know what a Sooner is. But having gone through so many years of Oklahoma history, that talks my heritage, tells me what that is and what the story about the covered wagon was. So that's just great to see that.
It was really hard not to put Sooner Schooner for me. It was just really hard because that's the one where I'm like, when I think Big 12 tradition, I think that. I decided to go with Paddle People because I think they're extremely disruptive. They're exciting. Yes. It helps create, like, there's never a quiet moment in the stadium because of them. It's very intimidating. I've seen them force false starts and timeouts. That kind of stuff just gets my blood flowing. Again, though, I think it's really hard not to say Sooner Schooner, though. I kind of just wanted to get different here. I think those are both pretty good ones. But where I think the Big 12 really excels is in pre and post game traditions. I can think of a lot of national in-game traditions that are a lot of fun. You know, my personal favorite, OHIO, going around the horseshoe, but pre and post game tradition, I think, is really where the Big 12 shines. So you could pick a pregame, you could pick a post game. Which one did you decide to go with?
As much as it pains me to say it, I'm going with the Baylor line. And this is the entire freshman class in their bright yellow shirts running out onto the field to greet the team and form the line for the team to run through to start the game. And that's impressive to watch. It's impressive to watch them when they're huddled in the one corner, ready to run out, how they run out, take their place, and then how quickly they jump in and get to their seats in the stadium. So,
yeah, I think also it's really interesting. I think Baylor has my favorite location of a student section where they just line them behind the bench. It's not a big section. It's not an end zone. It's like this really focused line. And what's interesting about Baylor is you mentioned they're freshmen. The freshmen sit closer to the field than the upperclassmen. The freshmen are the ones that run on the field instead of the upperclassmen. I think that's really smart because it gets them engaged in the football team. Sure. Instead of being like, no, you have to, like at Texas A&M where you have to be a senior to sit closer to the field. Like, no, you have to earn this spot. There it's like, hey, here's what it's like to be a Baylor fan. I do like the Baylor line. I think that is really cool. Also, crazy that there's no injuries. They like snake them through. It's like a cattle pen that they snake them through to get them onto the field. And like nobody gets run over. So props to them for that.
I've seen a few tumbles. It's kind of fun to watch those. So,
well, yes, that's no serious injuries, I should say.
Right.
My favorite specific post-game tradition. It's one you didn't get to hear in 2012 because West Virginia did not win. But when West Virginia wins, Country Roads is so cool. And I talked about this on the last podcast as well, but I'm a huge country music fan. And anytime where a whole stadium is in unison singing together, it's just a beautiful thing. It's so great. So I went with Country Roads. A little cliche, but probably for good reason. Okay, so favorite TCU tradition specifically. And I'm interested to hear your response to this because you have a lot more intimate knowledge of TCU traditions than I do.
Well, I had one that I would really love for it to become a tradition, but since it's only happened once, it really can't be. But that's when you run out of fireworks because you score so many touchdowns against a future Super Bowl MVP quarterback. That was against Patrick Mahomes, and we scored 82 points and didn't have enough fireworks to end the game because we ran out. But what I'm going to say is, and I know there was some interesting conversation you had with Nate last week on this. I'm going to go with the combination of the Froghorn and the bleacher creatures. The Froghorn is the old train engine turned frog painted purple, and it has that train engine sound to it, blows when touchdowns are made, other big plays. But it also, when Super Frog and the team take the field, that's when the Froghorn blows and the bleacher creatures get to run end zone to end zone. And it started out being just a thing for the kids to do, primarily with dad. Sometimes there's mom, but mostly it's dads grabbing the kids, giving them a t-shirt that said bleacher creature number one and let them run the field. And that has gone on for many, many years now, and it has grown in popularity. And there is no one doing an ID check at the top of the bridge to go down to the field. It's open to anybody who wants to run it. I know you and Andrew ran it.
Yep.
Didn't have any kids with you and you had a great time. So that is fun to watch from the stands and see the crowd go do it. So,
and it's a cool experience being somebody on the field to do it. Cause you know, I don't know how many times that you get to step down on the field at Amon G. Carter, especially with fans in the stands. Now, if you go there during the day, you know, keep off the grass, don't be on there too long, but you know, you can get a feel of it, but it's so much more exciting on game day with everything going around. Kind of makes you feel like a kid, but also like a player. So that's also that's kind of fun. Right. I like that. I put down Super Frog. I think mascots are a tradition. And he's one of the best mascots out there. Iconic.
Great.
And then I wanted to close with the most underrated tradition. I see your answer here and I love it. And I want to change mine to that, but I'm going to keep what I had. Your most underrated tradition in the Big 12.
I'm going with Kansas State and the Wabash Cannonball. And this, I know other schools claim it. Yes, but I've not seen it at other schools. I've seen it here.
It's Kansas State's.
It's their second fight song, basically. It is, as an opposing fan, yes, especially maybe at the basketball arena when it's in an enclosed environment, it's a little loud and a little obnoxious. But if you're just looking at it from a neutral standpoint, it's mesmerizing. It makes you want to get up and bop up and down and move left and right. And then, you know, they've got that little part in there that the coaches don't like, and they tried to say don't use this, but it's the little jab at the at their in-state school, which, you know, that just gets a little fun to hear and see that be done, and especially when they're told not to and then they still do it. So
it's one of those where, like, it's really catchy and you have to it's fun to listen to, but you have to watch the band because right. they make it. That's what makes it Kansas State is the band. I absolutely love it.
And I'll say at the Big 12 championship game, I absolutely hate the acoustics at AT&T Stadium.
I'm with you.
It's horrible.
Oh, it's so bad. You can't hear anything.
You can't. And here we are in the TCU section. I never could hear the TCU band. They were because they were below me. I couldn't hear the TCU student section because they were below me. But when Wabash Cannonball played in that place, you could hear it, you could see it, you could feel it.
Yeah, it's crazy how in an enclosed space, even when they have the sides closed, you can't hear an 80-person band.
Right.
You can't hear the drums.
Right.
But I was there for the Texas A&M Arkansas game, and you could hear the Aggie chants and Woo Pig. You would absolutely hear those.
Do you know the story of how this came to be for Kansas State?
Tell me.
So there was a fire in the band hall right before a game. I believe it was 1968. And so all of the sheet music that the band had for game day got burned up.
Oh, no.
Except the band director had taken home Wabash Cannonball the night before because he was working on tweaking it. And that was the only sheet music that they had for game day. So they played that one song over and over and over the entire game. And that's how it became a tradition.
That makes it even better. I love it. To close up, my most underrated tradition, you mentioned it earlier, the Texas Tech tortillas. I talked about it on the last podcast. I think it's hilarious. I think it's obnoxious, but in a funny way, because it doesn't impede on what I do. But what's funny is Texas Tech has to employ an extra 60 hands on the field to run out after kickoff, after punts, after whenever, especially after touchdowns, to go clean up these tortillas. And I think my favorite part of it is the fact that you cannot walk into Jones AT&T Stadium with a packet of tortillas. But they find ways to bring 500 or so tortillas in. They smuggle them in. I don't know where. Maybe I don't want to know where. I'm just going to say in the boots, maybe. But yeah, I think it's silly. It's nonsensical. I don't really know where it came from. And it's hilarious. I love it.
And the fact that that has spread to other places where Texas Tech is playing.
Yeah.
Specifically, meaning I've seen it at Fort Worth.
Yeah.
And so if you've ever tried to throw a tortilla, it's a little flimsy. It's hard to throw. What makes it easier to throw? Freeze them.
Oh, I didn't know that's what they do.
Yes. Freeze them so therefore they can fly further. But you know what happens when you get hit by a frozen tortilla?
Hurts.
It hurts.
Yeah, it's like a frisbee.
Right.
And I do know that it's bled over into Waco to where on that bridge, there's the risers, I think, from the old bridge in Waco that people try to toss the tortillas onto. The funny thing about that is you can't go get them. So they just stay there until the rain or the wind or a tornado washes them out.
Okay, there you go.
All right. Well, I think that was great. This was a little bit longer of an episode, but it wasn't really in depth. It was just a lot of hey, here's what we love about Big 12 football, and here's what makes Big 12 football great. The atmospheres, the traditions, the fans, the stadiums. Those listening, when we post this to Facebook, when we post this to Twitter, let us know what your favorites are, because there's absolutely so many. We're two people. We may have mentioned three or four each for some of these. But let us know your favorite traditions, your favorite stadiums, your favorite game day atmospheres. I'm genuinely interested in that. Please let us know. But thank you everyone for tuning in to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute College Football Podcast. You can find us at killerfrogs.com or on Twitter at Killer Frogs. I am Road to CFB. You can find Barry at Barry R. Lewis and continue that conversation over on Facebook, just like I asked. I really want to know. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, really whatever you use. And if you drop a review, that's going to be the best way for us to grow, reach other college football fans, other Big 12 fans, because we just kicked this up, but football season's right around the corner. Check back next week for the next episode of the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. I'm Brett Gibbons. That is Barry Lewis, and we'll catch you all next time.